welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. Can you hear me? It just sounds kind of funky.
No, I sound muffled.
Yeah. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard.
Don't be sorry. That's
no,
where they that's, are.
Yeah, quit being sorry. 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they can take care of pretty much any of your John Deere needs. Give them a call. Their phone number is 226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Did you already say 2469226?
Yeah, no, I didn't, because that's not their phone number.
Sure it is.
It's 226-9226.
Darn it.
Yeah, you let me do the promo there, Aaron.
I was worrying about turning the lights off in here.
Well, thank you, Aaron.
Hey, you're welcome, Bill. I know, people probably don't think we do that at home, but we do, and it's funny every time. Hey, and I wanted to mention last week, but we weren't really here. Sorry we weren't really here. I just want you to know we were actually here. We were at the door scratching like little rats, you know, on the glass. Hello, anybody in there? So I just wanted to say thank you to the individual people who sponsor us and help us out. Some are every month. Some are once in a while. And it's just the most helpful thing. You have no idea. Makes a big, big difference. And if you'd like to pitch in with that, let's see. If I was the Democrats, I would send out an email from MoveOn.org, and I would say, can you chip in $3? So, yeah.
Just $3.
Yeah, can you chip in $3? I'm like, how do you win an election on $3? But anyway, you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. This show was originally recorded on July 10th. Which is today in our life, but if it shows up at some later time and you wonder why we're
not making sense,
like saying things that, like last week, the show was from 2019, and I was like, oh man, I hope we didn't say anything about how great the president was. People will be like, they jumped ship. They switched teams. What the heck?
Oh no, what did I miss?
So just in case you were going to break up with us because you thought we switched teams, we didn't. The show was just from the Wayback Machine. It was kind of a fun one too. It reminded me I need to get a hold of Cindy Ayers and have her come back on with us because she's great and super smart and has had a very interesting career. So we do a lot of shows on a lot of topics, but the ones we do, a bunch of shows on a certain topic, I try to put those on tabs on the top of the website. So shows we do about pot, and there are plenty of those. We have a physician coming at the end of the month about the effects of marijuana and the whole medical, you know, medical yes, medical no. He'll be the last week of July, so don't miss him. He's pretty well known in that circle. I keep having people ask me to have him on. We have also done a bunch of shows on South Africa, super interesting. Lots of shows on China. We haven't done any shows lately on Islam because our expert on that particular topic had a bunch of death threats, actually, because if we're going to not put too fine a point on it. Yeah, they told him they were going to kill him, so, you know, he kind of quit talking about it for a little bit. But we may get him back on today. The next tab is environmental issues, and we have been remiss. I just want to say we have been remiss about the climate issues because they are so great to talk about and really important because we're watching a lot of our policy just destroy the country in the name of global warming. And you're going to
Green New Deal.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You're going to really be pissed off when you hear today's stuff. So our guest is William Walter Kay. We've had him on about a variety of subjects. He attained a bachelor's in English in 1982 and a law degree in 1985. After briefly practicing law, he went on to establish a small business and small businesses and nonprofits. He has written two books. One is called The Green Swastika, Environmentalism in the Third Right. And he has another one from Malthus to I never can say it. It's RU-286, the abortion pill. He's going to have to tell me. I always forget. And it's a primer on population control. So just in case you're You know, you're watching the news and you're listening to these things. You're like, are they trying to kill us all?
Well, you know, that came up a while back and everybody was kind of poo-pooing the
like,
idea.
Oh, that's just ridiculous.
Me, but I'll tell you what, lately.
But we did a show with William K. on population control. And I'll tell you what, worth listening to. I think maybe I'll move it to the environmental issues tab. And that way it'll be easy for you to find. I would recommend it. It was really very, very interesting. I'm sure we'll verge into that a little bit today. But he has produced or appeared in countless radio shows. Lots of them are ours. And has posted hundreds of articles around dozens of websites. He's a really, really good writer, by the way. He has been an outspoken critic of catastrophic anthropogenic global warming, the hypothesis, and related policies for about 35 years. Writes a lot in the Canada Free Press. And I have attached his article, Climate Change and European Cultural Imperialism. Now, on the one hand, you're thinking, well, there's a lot of things to talk about. But you know, well, we've been, I don't know if obsessing is the right word, but okay, obsessing. On all these other issues, the environmental stuff has been grinding on in the background. And I don't think when people really figure out where we're going, they're going to like it.
No.
At all. So, Mr. K, how goes life in Canada?
Good. We're having a nice day. You know, this morning I checked the weather in Redding, California.
Yeah. What did it say it was?
You guys are a lot hotter than we are.
Yeah.
No.
You guys are heading over 100.
Well, we're only 2 miles from the sun, so, you know, when you live 2 miles from the sun, you got to expect that. We were on our way here, and it said it was 98 in the car, and I'm like, okay, if it's 99, there's global warming. If it's 98, there isn't. So we're driving along looking at the temperature in the car. Okay, it got all the way down to 96.
That 1 degree.
No, we got all the way down to 96 on our way here. We only have like a, I don't know, 10-minute drive, 8-minute drive. And, it was like 97. It's fake. 96. It's super fake. And then it went to 99. I was like, oh, damn it. It's real.
Yeah. It's supposed to be 108 tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can.
Yeah, so we have our spike of global warming in the summertime, which is what we're known for. And that's why our population is low. Only
you're
the
losing people.
Yeah, well,
more to do with your global warming policies than your weather. Believe
you're,
me,
you're absolutely
kidding.
Right.
There'd be more people going.
Oh my God! And our forest policies, because we keep burning their houses down because we don't, you know, thin our forests. So
yeah, that definitely cuts back
use
on
them
the
or lose
population.
Them.
Yep, yep. We're just losing them. Then we could buy your lumber, so the Canadians are excited.
Well, our raw logs, anyways.
Yeah, true. So. This article, I'll tell people what I did post on the site. I posted the whole article, but the one excerpt from the article.
It is a report.
Yeah,
it's not an article. It is a report.
Oh, I'm sorry. A report. But at the end, and I'll have to fix it because it says excerpt from article. But I posted your final comments. And if you read nothing else, read the final comments, please. But very, very interesting. So where would you like to start with this razzle-dazzle today?
Well, to me, the science, or the pseudoscience behind climate change, that's a given. You know, you get into a certain level of analysis of what is driving the climate change campaign, and you're dealing with people who do not take the so-called climate science seriously. So this is about energy policy. It is about certain regions imposing an energy policy on other regions. The people who are driving this campaign, they know that this is a very speculative hypothesis that we're catastrophically heating the planet. You know, they are not true believers in this. They are true believers in promoting this energy transition, phasing out of petroleum, phasing out of coal. That they are utterly committed to. And too many of the climate skeptics and enviro-skeptics are always barking up the wrong tree. They're blaming the wrong people for this. The point of this particular report, the climate change and European cultural imperialism, was just to drive home to not just Americans, but everybody who's in the Anglosphere, everybody who's in the English-speaking world, definitely Canadians and Australians, that the Europeans have, over the last 30 years, surreptitiously captured key cultural assets throughout the English-speaking world. And so I just profiled 8 European-based multinational corporations, 2 of them are state-owned, six of them are privately owned, and those eight companies, I would estimate, are now publishing about 80% of all of the books in the English language right now. The bookstores you go into, they shouldn't, like there's one company, Bertelsmann, by my calculations, they own over 360 publishing company subsidiaries. That's how many they've been buying out throughout America. They started doing it in the late 70s, but they bought Doubleday and Bantam, and they just keep buying them. And now they're by far the world's largest book publisher. They're also a major media conglomerate in Europe. But if you went into a standard bookstore, they shouldn't say, you know, Alfred A. Knopf publisher or what have you, the Penguin publisher. These are the old days, the old publishing houses, when there actually was a standalone publishing firm with its own printing press and all that. Those days are long gone. Bertelsmann now probably owns 400 publishing houses. They don't call them houses, they call them imprints, because they're just a stamp on the books. It's all coming from the same company. And they alone are probably publishing about half of the new books in the United States every year. They have five large printing facilities in the United States. They also do commercial publishing of catalogs, what have you, but their main line is publishing English language books, and they just change the imprints on them. You know, all those, what appear to be independent publishing companies, those are all long gone. They've been buying them up since 1978. In the 1980s, they really started to buy them up. And it gives them a lot of cultural control. There's another company called Holzbrinck, and they own Scientific American and Nature Publications. You can't really count the number of science publications they put out. It's in the dozens now. There's another company I profile called Elsevier. They're out of the Netherlands, and they are now publishing 2,650 academic journals, and those are almost entirely science and medicine journals. They're probably putting out over 100 journals that specialize in atmospheric physics or, you know, climate change related policies. And this is a very hands-on hierarchical company that controls the editorial boards of every one of those academic journals. They are now publishing 18% of the world's academic publications. And if you confine that to the English-speaking world, it's probably 35-40% of all of the academic journals in the English-speaking world are coming out of this one corporation in Holland. And if you combine their publishing assets, with Holzbrinck, definitely over half of all science publications in the world are coming out of those two companies. And in terms of journals that specialize or emphasize climate change or atmospheric physics or long-range, you know, paleoclimatology, I'm guessing it's 95-99% of all publications are coming from these firms. And every one of these firms goes out of their way to boast about how committed they are to the climate agenda. You know, they aren't keeping this secret. That is front and center. Almost every one of them has a philanthropic foundation attached to them, and they openly state, you know, we are devoted to the United Nations Sustainability Goals, we are members of the French Climate Pledge, etc. They are committed to the Paris Climate Accord. They make no secret about that. They are very biased about their opinion on the climate campaign, and these companies dominate academic and regular book publishing across the English-speaking world. And then you got other companies like nobody's ever heard of, like Vivendi and companies like that. But I'm guessing they own Universal Music, which now has 55% of the U.S. music market. And that's a Paris-based company, multinational, 80,000 employees. Amongst their many assets are, you know, lithium battery manufacturing facilities, electric bus manufacturing facilities, all sorts of their deeply committed to the climate industrial complex. The bulk of their assets are actually involved in climate-related industries, but part of their conglomerate is Universal Music Group and also one of the world's largest advertising agencies. They have over 20,000 employees and so on. So if you take these eight companies together, and they are quite often they are members of these various lobby groups and other blocks. This is a concerted operation coming out of Europe, but they have a profound influence on English-speaking culture. So if you want to understand how it came to pass, but a thoroughly bogus theory like human-caused global warming came to have a consensus within the scientific establishment and came to have a consensus amongst politicians, you have to look at how these companies went about capturing the cultural assets of the English-speaking world. That is the mechanism by which they did this. If you just have some sort of airy-fairy conspiracy that somehow, it's climate hysteria has swept the land, that doesn't make any sense, really.
No.
If you realize that the European governments devoted themselves a long time ago to the petroleum phase-out, before these companies even went on their global march acquiring English cultural assets, then it starts to make sense.
See,
anyway,
that's the thing about it. When it doesn't make any sense, then people kind of discount it. So, I thought that your paper that you had written on this actually filled in a gap. That's really a glaring missing piece of it's a missing piece of information.
Yeah, we're all staring at social media and so much of what they. Talk about comes from printed media.
Exactly.
Which
what
is,
are they posting? The stuff that. There's always the slant. We have a lot more to go. We'll be right back with our guest, William Walter Kay, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Don't they ever? But not everybody gets to rule the world. Today we're talking about the people who have kind of captured the world, actually. It's interesting. I had a comment in the chat, William, about the music industry, and I know we'll get to that. But they're a big influence on this as well. All right. I'll stop driving the bus. I'm back in the back seat where I belong. You go right ahead.
You're like, what is, in terms of what has really changed with the climate campaign, if you go back to 1978, U.S. Congress passed a law called the Power Plant and Industrial Fuel Use Act, and it prohibited the building of a gas-fired electrical generator. And it required that all existing gas-fired electrical generators be converted to coal. This is 1978, very smart law. The thinking then, which was quite accurate, was that natural gas is too precious of a commodity to squander on boiling water or making electricity. You can do a lot of things with natural gas. You can cook with it, direct home heating, you can drive vehicles with it, but you really can't do with coal effectively. So the thinking was, why are we wasting natural gas making electricity when you're the Saudi Arabia of coal down there? You've got centuries and centuries supply of coal. Use the coal for electricity. Do not waste gas on it. Several years into that act, immediately the American Gas Association was very upset with this. They were hoping to capture or attempt to capture part of the electricity market. If you date the climate campaign to 1988, that's when the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change was founded. That's when James Hansen makes his appearance before the Congress and what have you. The campaign had been going on for several years, but that's most people pick 1988 as the year. In that year, gas was supplying 9% of U.S. electricity. Coal was supplying almost 60% of U.S. electricity. wind, zero, solar, zero, biomass, zero. If you look today, coal is now down to 22%. Natural gas is at 38%. Wind and solar are now collectively, I think, around 15 or 16%, plus a little more from biomass. Those three, I like gas and its, you know, complements, wind and solar, are now over half of the U.S. market. So they went from 9% to over 50%. Coal went from 60% to 22%. And that is a massive transition that has happened. And it happened because of the war on coal. First they used acid rain, and that was exposed as bogus. Then they used mercury poisoning, also completely bogus. Then they really settled on this, you know, that coal emits more CO2 than does natural gas per kilowatt as one of the pretexts for phasing out coal. But it has led to dramatic increases in electricity prices and a really substantial economic change. It simply would not have occurred if the market had been allowed to do its thing. In fact, you'd probably have even more coal-fired electricity, you know, 65, 70%. And the plan is to completely phase out coal. We're well on the way to that in Canada. And that is, it's an economic travesty. It's obviously not an energy policy that was made in America. You know, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. America is the Saudi Arabia of coal. It makes no sense at all that they should be abandoning coal for a more expensive electricity, particularly if you're counting on wind and solar and what have you, far more expensive electricity.
Unless reliable.
Wandering natural gas.
Right.
And unreliable. It only works with a natural gas backup. You have to have this sort of combo in effect. So it's never been just wind and solar alone. It's always been this wind, solar, gas combination that has been displacing coal and new nuclear and everything else. But that's a very powerful little juggernaut of a lobby. You know, the very first pressure group in the United States that had the word climate in its name was called the Climate Institute. It was founded in 1986. Its sponsors were the American Gas Association. And the American Gas Association remains this driving force behind climate change propaganda. Everyone wants to blame, you know, AOC or these other, you know, fringe elements, you know, the rent-a-mobs, you know, the Greenpeace type,
right,
the Extinction Rebellion. Those people are peripheral to this. You know, if you really want to know who's driving it, go to a group that's called the Oil and Gas Climate Institute. And you list there, it's all the major oil companies, BP, Shell, what have you, even ExxonMobil, they were the last to join. But first they purchased America's largest independent gas supplier, and then they jump on the climate bandwagon as well.
Well, how does that benefit them? They're not going to sell as much oil, right?
Ultimately, down the road, they're shooting themselves in the foot, but the declines in petroleum use are really slow, particularly as the third world industrializes, but they're more than making up for it by increased gas sales.
That's
almost
correct.
Every major oil company is also a gas supplier. Certainly now they geared up for this. Like BP, which now refers to itself as Beyond Petroleum, and Royal Dutch Shell,
oh,
it's called Royal Dutch Shell because the Dutch royal family are the number one shareholder, they jumped on the climate bandwagon in the early to mid-1990s, and they saw that what they are going to do is capture coal's share of the electricity market. The United States, last time I checked at the Energy Information Administration, all electricity bills combined exceed $400 billion. So if you're capturing 30, 40% of that, it's a huge business.
Yeah, and their profits
so
are off the charts.
Yeah, they're capturing what they're losing, but they haven't really lost any petroleum sales yet. It doesn't matter how high it's a very inelastic market. They can keep jacking the price up. People don't stop driving. I mean, ultimately, if they can ram this electric vehicle thing through, they will take a hit. But once again, these guys are way ahead of the curve. You know, go to Shell's website, their Fed head office website, and they've got, you know, the filling station of the future. And it's got all these electrical chargers, plus it's got compressed natural gas, still selling a bit of oil and gas. And every station is now going to be a strip mall, because to charge your car up is going to take 45 minutes. So you're going to have to, you know, get your hair done or, you know, I don't know, do something.
And pay rent for your charging space while you're gone. I mean, this whole electric thing is just about...
Oh, we're totally not set up for that. If,
no.
You know, mass
people... Oh, yeah,
people.
You're hitting it right on the head.
Go through your day. Who's got 4 hours to go twiddle their thumbs somewhere? Or you've got to hire maybe you've got to hire an Uber to go do the rest of your stuff while you pay rent on a charging space over at Target, because you don't want to spend 4 hours at Target, because, like, I would never go there, but anyway. Or, what do you call it, Burger King or something where these charging things are. And once all the cars need that, they're going to have to put the charging stations out in the middle of nowhere. How are people getting back and forth from that? What, do we have, like, big airports? Like, we just sit out there like we do, wait for flights?
It's a mystery to me. I mean, Canada, like California, like the entire European Union, has committed themselves to prohibit internal combustion vehicle sales by the year 2035. In Canada, it's supposed to be by the year 2030, 60% of all new car sales are going to have to be zero emissions, not plug-in hybrids, but fully electric vehicles. Same in Europe. They're committing themselves to this. In Europe, the Automobile Manufacturers Association absolutely devoted to it. If you want to go to an excellent website that sort of gives you the lowdown on what's coming next, go to the website of the European Automobile Manufacturers Association. And it's all the culprits there: Volkswagen, BMW, Renault from France, and they are utterly committed to this transition to the electric vehicle. These are the actual car manufacturers themselves.
Well, I heard Ford was going to have all electric pickups by next year, year after. That's all they're going to make is electric trucks.
I believe that Ford Europe is part of the. That alliance.
Yeah, that I don't see how that's going to work.
Yeah, tell me about it. I live in Canada. You know, every second vehicle is a monster truck. And when you read about the range, like how far these vehicles can drive, first of all, Google is complicit in this, because I know I was looking at that yesterday. Like, what is the range of electric vehicles? The first site that pops up and lists the vehicles by their range, and some of them are like 400 miles, 500 miles. And I said, well, how much does that car cost? The first 12 vehicles, like 12 vehicles with the best range, none of them were in production yet.
Yeah.
These are fantasy vehicles.
Yeah, but they're still touting it.
You keep working your way down the list till you find a vehicle that's actually on the market for sale. 250 miles is the best they had, and that's what they're advertising. And they also put a little caveat saying, you won't get this in cold weather. And this is for a small urban car. So I'm visualizing these monster trucks. They're like every second vehicle in Canada.
Yeah.
And
in the cold weather, they're not going to get 80 miles.
Yeah. How's that going to work out in Minnesota and the Dakotas and, you know, all those sub-zero states?
So you drive 1 hour, then you charge for 45 minutes. I don't think, certainly, this isn't a market-driven change. This isn't, you know, the customers, you know, demanding this type of vehicle. They're heavy. The batteries, they're trying to impose an 8-year warranty on the batteries. They're having a difficult time doing that. Battery replacements can cost up to $20,000.
Yeah.
So the average
car, and what do we do with the old batteries, by the way? Yeah. What about that little problem?
There's one of the BMW in Europe, the family that owns it, they're called the Quant family. They're one of the richest families in the world. Brother and sister, the only two surviving descendants. They're both worth over $20 billion. They are building battery recycling facilities in every city in Europe. They've already set the money aside for that. They set aside $5 billion U.S. for their own battery manufacturing facility. This is BMW. So they are planning some major battery recycling. I don't know the technology. I don't know if they can recoup any of that lithium or whether it's completely toast after 8 years. But I'm just trying to visualize, you know, you've got most Americans, apparently, they expect their cars to last about 12 years. The more prosperous people, they sort of trade them off every several years. But who's going to buy a used car after 7 years when you know you've got to put a $20,000 battery in?
Right, right.
Yeah. I don't see what the retail value of that is.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Another one of these, you know, but in terms of who's driving it, I really recommend going to that European Motor Vehicle Manufacturers Association. There's 16 companies involved. In total, they have over 3 million employees in the European Union. They employ 12% of the European Union's manufacturing workforce. Their surplus, because this is Volkswagen and Porsche and what have you, they sell cars all over the world. You'll see a lot of Mercedes and what have you in Volkswagens in the United States. They run a surplus of almost $80 billion a year. That's how much motor vehicles they are exporting to the world, the European Manufacturers, Automobile Manufacturers Association. They're spending 60 billion euros a year, which is about 60 billion U.S. right now, they're almost at parity, on research and development a year. These companies, these European automakers, are paying for a third of all the research and development being done in Europe is coming out of these companies. And if you go to their website, they are absolutely demanding that governments in Europe spend more money on chargers. They want like 20,000 a week built. They want 7 million built by the year 2030. Because this whole project isn't going to fly.
No.
Unless you've got fast chargers all over the place.
Well, they came out with they had a study, gosh, it was just a month or so ago, that they went and surveyed all the chargers in the San Francisco Bay Area, and over a third of them didn't work. So you run out and, oh, I need a charge. You pull up your charger, it's out of service. So you got to go find one that works. So, I mean, that's another big issue is yeah, they can put all the chargers out there, but they got to service them and make sure that everything works on them. And all these different manufacturers haven't agreed yet on a common port for charging. So, like, if you have a Tesla, you have to charge at a Tesla station. You can't go to a generic station. Same with Volkswagen. I don't know what the other ones are doing, but they haven't even agreed on a common plug-in yet. So I think that drastically reduces the choices of charging for your electric vehicle when you're out driving your 250 miles a day.
Well, there's some hope. Shell Petroleum is investing in this monster fleet of they look like sort of like a tow truck, but they're chargers. So they anticipate in the future people are going to be running out of juice all over the place. So you'll call this truck, and he's going to show up and give you enough juice to get you to the next charging facility.
Wow!
In terms of what the future looks like, the Netherlands, which has a land mass half the size of the state of Maine, now has 90,000 chargers, public chargers. They lead the world in terms of public chargers. But I'm trying to visualize, you know, how many that would be across, you know, a country like the United States. You're dealing with, like, millions and millions.
Oh, millions.
If they want 7 million in Europe, they're going to need, you know, 20 million of these things in the U.S.
Well, you've got areas in the United States that are so remote. I mean, you've got, mm-hmm. you know, miles and miles and miles between towns. You can't have...
I just look at how many miles I drive in a week and then factor in how much time I would spend waiting for the car to be able to take me there. They probably think we're going to use those. They've got these all over the place now. All of a sudden, these little scooters, they're called birds. And so I guess you get on these little scooters. So maybe that's what we all do. We're all relegated to scooters.
Yeah, as long as you got a credit card, you just swipe it on the bird and jump on a scooter and run around.
We're going to be those old people with the Velcro sneakers hanging off our shoulder. So we'll let people switch to decaf here and get a refill. We will be right back. You're listening to We the People. Our guest is William Walter Kay. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Little White Lies been around for years. Little White Lies ringing in your ears. You turn around, come around back on you. Well, that little white lie's catching up to you.
Class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles, kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendants. 30,000 feet above could be Oklahoma. Just a bunch of square cornfields and wheat farms, man, it all looks the same. Miles and miles of back roads and highways connecting little towns with funny names. Who'd want to live down there in the middle of nowhere? They've never drove through Indiana. Met the man who plowed that earth, planted that seed, busted his ass for you and me. You're caught a harvest moon in Kansas. They'd understand why God made those flyovers.
Yes, thought it was appropriate. We brought up the flyover states because electric cars are going to be a big zero.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, William, earlier we were talking about how the EU has pretty much dedicated themselves to this whole green energy scheme. How's that working out for them over there?
Well, they sort of got caught short with the Russian-Ukrainian war. They were not they weren't planning on having to make the transitions they are. I mean, Germany is still hitting 30-40% coal-fired electricity. They're still importing huge amounts of petroleum. So on the one hand, it looks like they haven't done much. On the other hand, you look at just how much they have developed their wind industry, their solar industries, their biofuel industries. They've made quite a change there. And they certainly made a significant shift towards natural gas. But most of these countries, with the exception of Norway, which isn't part of the EU, and to a slightly less extent the Netherlands, which has some natural gas, these companies do not have a single oil rig in their whole country. But they are, you know, they're relentless about this. In terms of wind power, they've certainly made some enormous advances, and so is California. So they're being, like California, they're being saddled with really high electricity prices, and they're not giving up. They've put in the money. All of the major European multinationals have committed themselves to this. A lot of their, like, Electrolux and their appliance manufacturers are coming out with these super energy-saving devices, and they're using energy-saving regulations to more or less block out any competition into the European Union. As I mentioned, all of the European motor vehicle companies are pretty well going to be all electric in the next 3 or 4 years. But no, how's it working out for them? They're ending up with disruptions of supply, just like California. They're ending up with very expensive, uncompetitive electricity relative to their competitors. The whole climate campaign, which they are in the pilot seat of, is not going to work unless they can get the rest of the world to go along with it. If the countries of the English-speaking world, primarily the USA, Canada, Australia, stick with fossil fuels, they are going to be countries that have vastly cheaper energy, transportation, and electricity. Europe will become very uncompetitive. They will have to go into sort of a protectionist fortress if they go fully electric, fully renewable, like they plan on doing. They are going to be a country with enormously expensive electricity. Give an example of expensive electricity. California right now, I think it's the most expensive in the Union. It's like 27 cents kilowatt hour. Quebec, the province in Canada, has it's 5 cents kilowatt hour. So it is more than 500% more expensive.
And we've already been told there's going to be lots of blackouts this summer.
Yeah.
There's not enough of it because they're, you know, restricting a lot of the production, shutting down nuclear, depending on wind and it isn't working for them. And now we're going to get caught short.
It's mind-boggling that you've done this to yourself. You know, there used to be a saying, you know, Marshall McLuhan, that California is where the future comes from. I sure hope that isn't the case. We haven't seen things like brownouts, things like that in Canada for 70 years. And I'm sure you hadn't seen them in California for a long time.
No.
And now you are. And they get back to this whole thing with the electric vehicle. You know, visualize a Los Angeles freeway. All of those cars are going to be electrically charged. Where is that electricity going to come from? Unless they're planning, you know, to triple the amount of electrical generation in that state, and they're not. It just seems to be inconceivable. This applies to Canada as well. You know, the main market, you know, unless they're really planning on doubling or tripling the amount of electricity that is going to be produced, I don't see where these cars are going to be charged.
Yeah.
You see, an electric car, when it's plugged in at peak draw, is equal to three houses.
Right.
So you got millions of cars in Los Angeles all plugged in overnight. That's going to be, you know, doubling, tripling their overall electrical draw. I just, you know, increasingly it looks like an aspirational target. Like they want to be all electric, like Canada, all electric motor vehicles, all light-duty trucks, all vans are supposed to be zero emissions, 100% electric, by the year 2035.
Yeah, we're not doing anything to build infrastructure to support that. I mean, if you take your electric vehicle home and plug in your standard charger, it takes days to give you a full charge unless you buy the high output charger, which you have to have wired into your house special because your house circuit won't take that. It's too heavy a draw. So you know, they feel good about driving down the road for free. It's not free. It's going to be expensive.
What's it going to do to electricity prices if they start doing this? Which will be good news for the electric companies. But yeah, I did some research into these chargers. There's three levels. There's the level one. That's, as you were saying, you plug it in. Hopefully overnight, over those 12 hours, it might give you a full charge. The level twos go up to 240 volts, and that's you get for 1 hour of charge on a typical car, you get 25 miles of range. You know, a good bicyclist can beat that, like in 1 hour. Like, I want to see a Tour de France cyclist racing someone in an electric car relying on a level two charger. Because he would have to keep stopping every couple hours and plugging it in for an hour, and the cyclist would pull past him.
Yeah.
And then they've got what's called the DCFCs, the direct current fast chargers, and they go up to 1,000 volts, and they're supposed to be able to give you an 80% charge of a standard urban car, electric car, in 30 to 45 minutes. But those, I do not think that those can be installed in a regular home. I think you need a new sort of wiring coming directly from the power company to do those.
Well, sure.
And the facility itself, they start at $50,000.
Yeah, your standard house circuit. I mean, when you buy a house, it typically comes with a 100-amp fuse box or breaker box. You're not going to put a charger like that in your home on a 100-amp service. Yeah, you got to jump it up to like a 200 or more amp service to create.
240 volts, and that's going to be expensive.
Oh, absolutely.
And even there, you're only getting 25 miles for an hour of charge. So forget about road trips.
No kidding.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten to the part about how our goods and services move around the country when we no longer have trucks to carry things. Is that just going to be magical?
Well,
are we going to use drones from Amazon?
In Europe, they're building 70,000 direct current fast chargers for trucks. Their 18-wheelers are all going to go electric.
Well, that might work in Europe, where you're all congested and, you know, everything is pretty close together. But we have warehouses like in Sacramento that deliver to Redding on a daily basis, which is 160 miles. I don't think they have that technology for an 18-wheeler to go 160 miles round. I mean, and you know, 320 miles round trip plus deliveries. It's not there.
That's inconceivable.
No,
it's inconceivable.
Yeah, and that's not even the biggest travel. I mean, gosh, we have Walmart warehouses in our area that go to Portland. That's 395 miles away. You can't load a truck and drive 395 miles over the mountains in a day. Probably not 2 days. So,
well, in any given week, I'll go 1,000 to 1,500 miles. Like, I have time to charge a vehicle when you do the math on how far I would go and how much time I would spend twiddling my thumbs. That's just...
Yeah, no, with a level 2, you get 25 miles of a standard car per 1 hour of charging. So unless they're finding and building these direct current fast chargers all over the place, it's inconceivable this is going to work. Yeah, in Europe, they're planning to do it, but they're planning on spending trillions of dollars of public money. The French government just renationalized their main electricity company. France is almost entirely nuclear-powered, but, you know, they're looking down the road and they're saying there's no way you can expect a profit-driven company to be able to supply this. This is going to be a massive money-losing endeavor.
They are
planning to build...
And not to say what it's going to do to our food supply. I mean... You can't.
The price of everything is going to go through the roof.
Yeah,
exactly. Food and fuel inflation is going to drive a quarter of the population to the absolute brink.
Yeah.
Now this is, you know, they seem determined to ram this through. They are so deeply embedded in the government. I mean, Americans, there's some semblance of democracy. You've got a Republican Party there. I do hope they just sweep the midterm elections. I hope there's enough that are not rhinos to really kibosh a lot of these regulations. That was a very positive Supreme Court decision that reined in the EPA. There is hope in America. In Canada, the group we call conservatives voted unanimously in favor of the Paris Climate Accord.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, things like COVID and that. It was just terrifying to live in Canada. There wasn't a single member of the parliament that spoke out against it. Of all of the representatives in the provincial legislatures, when there's about 1,000 of them, half a dozen of them spoke out against it, and almost all of their political careers were destroyed. Like issue after issue, where it's like I'm living in a one-party state. And of all the countries in the world where going electric vehicle makes the least sense, it's got to be Canada.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because it's so cold. You think you got remote locations there. Now, America looks like Hong Kong compared to Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
Canada has a population almost identical to California's, but we're 25 times the size of California. Everything is hundreds of miles apart.
Yeah, you guys are the flyover states.
There's no way this country is going to function. Like, maybe sort of Toronto, that sort of belt in there, you know, these highly urbanized areas. If you want to spend a lot more on electricity and you want to dramatically increase the electricity supply, you could probably go electric in a highly urbanized area like that.
Sure.
With a lot of transition and a huge amount of expense. But in the western Canada, places like this where the cities are all 500 miles apart, forget it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, back to the main point, there's no economic reason for North America to be abandoning petroleum.
No.
We're not France, Germany, Spain, Italy that does not have an oil rig. That whole area doesn't have one oil rig. We're not there. We are up to our knees in oil.
But see, if they can't break us,
it'll last us centuries.
If they can't break us, though, then and make us join their,
they're doomed.
Their crazy thing.
They're not our allies.
Yeah,
what it comes down to.
That's the thing.
You know, they really want to sort of colonize America. If you look at America's history with Germany and Spain and these other countries, it has not been a peaceful history. They've long viewed America as a threat. They have a very dim view of the American people. They are not your allies, that is for sure. And it's, people are often misplacing the blame for this. But, you know, it's the Europeans and their agenda. they hated the whole idea of conquering the West. That was largely done with people who were fleeing European tyranny.
Right.
They have not, America has repeatedly gone to war with those countries, and they have not forgotten this. It's a big mistake to view the European Union as your allies.
Right.
They really are not.
They're in a very different position than we are with our energy sector. Next hour, I know we're going to get in it, but I want to talk about why people would do this and why people buy into it. And let's give people some tools so that when they start hearing this stuff, they know what they're listening to. You know, they can kind of decode the speak. Otherwise, people, it gets too far down the road and all of a sudden captured. So we'll be back with our guest, William Walter Kay. You are listening to We the People, and you can find all of this at wethepeopleradio.us along with the archives and the commercial-free version of the show. It'll be up later this afternoon once Robert does it. And I think we're probably verging on the break, but I was dancing around with the time. There we go.
Stop me now. I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball. Don't stop me now. If you want to have a good time.